2021 marks the 400th anniversary of the first Thanksgiving in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And the Pilgrims, of course, were the center of that whole event. And we have this tradition in America for 400 years now of Thanksgiving. In fact, the fact that we even have a national holiday, a day set aside to thank God for his many blessings, is something that gets back to the Pilgrims. And we're going to talk about the Pilgrims right now with a Pilgrim expert. His name is Leo Martin, and he's involved with a center called the Jenny. It used to be called the Jenny Museum, J-E-N-N-E-Y. That's actually named after a man, John Jenny, who owned and started a mill there in Plymouth. TheJenny.org is their website. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Leo, it is great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sure. And I want to just, real briefly, I want to just give a quick context to this. I got to meet you as I was putting together a video, which is now part of Providence Forum. And the purpose of the video was just to tell the story of the Pilgrims, who they were, why they did what they did, and all the incredible obstacles they had to overcome in order to achieve their goal. And you were one of the key guests in the whole program, and I really appreciate that. Plus, you let us videotape some of the different shots and images that you have assembled through the years at the Jenny. So you were very helpful, and I am just greatly appreciated. People can get more information at the website, providenceforum.org. How long have you been interested in the Pilgrims? What got you first interested in this subject?
Well, I grew up in the area. I was born in Boston, and I've lived on the South Shore of Boston my whole life. So I've been here, and I've been able to appreciate the Pilgrim story. But 21 years ago, I actually moved here to Plymouth, and my wife and I discovered the grist mill that John Jenny ran, and it was empty. And it had been used for 3 years. I asked about it, and the owner said, well, this is the site of the oldest mill in the country. And I said, well, you know what? I think I'm going to run it. And so we started leasing the mill, and 4 months later we opened, and here we are 21 years later.
And what exactly is a grist mill? How does that work?
A grist mill grinds grain into flour. Back then, mills were named by their function. A fulling mill was a clothing factory. A sawmill was a machine shop. And a grist mill produced the food. So not only was this the first mill built in the country, and it's a grist mill, so it had all the water rights on the river because it produced all the food.
Huh. And there's some sort of little rivulet or something like that, little waterway, tiny little waterway behind the mill, and there's something about fish in Plymouth once a year. Tell us about that. You know what I'm talking about with all this, the yeah, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, there is a little, the river is right behind our building. And again, it runs right past the mill. And there is a, what we call a fish lather that runs along the mill. So fish in April and May can come up river, get by the mill, and go up to our originating pond and spawn. Because if they spawn or have their eggs in the river, they'll wash out. So for 6 weeks, these fish go upstream, and right now they're running between an average of 150 to 200,000 fish a season. So for 6 weeks, you cannot see the bottom of our river. It is solid fish, and those fish are called herring. And herring we used as fertilizer by the Pilgrims because of the sandy soil here. They fertilized with the fish, and that allowed the corn to grow more freely. We were taught that by the Indians.
Huh. Okay, now let's go ahead and back up. Who were exactly were the Pilgrims? And just go ahead and tell us their story briefly. And, you know, take us from England to America.
Okay, in England, the Pilgrims were a product of the Reformation, which meant that that people didn't need a king or a priest or a bishop to intercede between them and God. They could talk to God themselves. In other words, they could pray. But here's the thing with the Pilgrims. They thought God talked back to them, so it was a two-way conversation. But back in England, there was a gentleman there by the name of King James who didn't appreciate that relationship with God. As a matter of fact, he was the King of England and the head of the Anglican Church. And as such, he considered himself God's representative on earth. So in England, you had to belong to his church. if you didn't, that was breaking the law. So if someone tells you you're God's representative on earth, eventually you will think you're God on earth. And that's what happened with the king. So now he is expecting everybody to worship him. Well, John Robinson and the Pilgrims, Robinson couldn't go for that, so he left the Church of England, and they had church in their homes. In other words, the Pilgrims separated from the Church of England. That's why we're called separatists. Another group back then, theologically similar to the Pilgrims, stayed in the Anglican Church and tried to purify it from within. We call them the Puritans. They came 10 years later and founded Boston. But the big difference here, Jerry, is that when they separated from the church, Robinson never wanted to see one person in charge of everything ever again like the king. So he had his congregation elect him pastor, not appoint him. And so electing him pastor is the beginning of self-rule in our country, and the result is the Mayflower Compact. Now, the Mayflower Compact is a covenant with God that we would run a body politic with God in charge. See, the power in England at the time went from God to the king to the people in the thinking of England. Again, making the king God's representative on earth. In the Mayflower Compact, the order is changed from God to the people to the king. So now the people, in quotes, in charge, are responsible to the people who are responsible to God. So now no longer is the king, are we under anarchy, we're under civil government, where the people are in charge. But the Pilgrims believed you cannot have that civil government with the people in charge unless they govern themselves first from the inside out. In other words, you had to be in line with the law of God internally to be able to have a civil government externally. So for the Pilgrims, the whole government started with an inward change.
All right, and the Pilgrims themselves were basically, okay, it's obviously a small, dedicated group of Christians. They made a covenant with each other when they first became a congregation. But when they came over, they had to hire people that were sympathetic to their cause, understanding they were building a Bible commonwealth, if you will, for lack of a better term or phrase. But they were sympathetic, but they weren't necessarily part of the actual church congregation, like Miles Standish or John Alden. Tell us about the quote-unquote saints and strangers that were on the Mayflower.
Okay, the separatists, pilgrims, were only half the amount of people on the Mayflower. The other half of the people were not separatists. They were coming for other reasons, mostly economic, and they were called the strangers. And the pilgrims that were called the saints. And this is kind of a funny thing, because what happened with the pilgrims is they separate from the Church of England, and what they're thinking is, look, just leave us alone, let us worship how we want to, we won't bother you, you don't bother us, and we'll worship God, and everybody will be happy. So they separate from the church. But what happens when they're leaving England? Half the people on the boat don't think like them. That actually don't even agree with them. So what they try to do, separate God with his sense of humor, says, you're not separating from anything. I'm putting half the people on that boat that don't agree with you. Now get along with them. So it's a great message for me that God doesn't want us to separate. He wants us out there in the community doing what we need to do. But the problem here was that the deal that was made by the finances of the group said that we would go to the New World for 7 years and work 6 days a week. Of the 6 days, four went to the people financing the trip. The other two were kept for us by a personal profit, and then we kept the land we personally developed. But as they get on the boat, the guy in charge of that financing, Thomas Weston, changes the deal. You will work 6 of 6 days for me for 7 years, and at the end of 7 years, I own half your property. And he didn't even have to say that, because if I work for somebody else for full time for seven years, I own nothing. Everything's theirs.
Wow.
So now the rules change, and they're getting on the boat virtually indentured servants. So some of them said, you know, we're just not going to go. This doesn't make any sense, which left a void on the boat. So that had to be filled. Weston opened it to other people, and there's where the strangers came from. They were filling the gap. Yeah.
Oh, so. By the way, this Weston guy, was he? He was one of the British businessmen that lent the pilgrims the money so they could even make this voyage. Did he ever go himself to the New World or no?
Well, that's a very complicated story.
Oh,
2 years after he financed the trip with the pilgrims, he sent two ships over here to compete with the pilgrims. So he's sending someone to compete with the colony he financed. And they were a bunch of bad actors, so the pilgrims kicked them out, and they went down the road a little bit to a place called Wessagusset. We call it Weymouth today. And they set up their camp down there, at which time they didn't get along with the Indians. They stole from them. They actually, at some point, some of them sold themselves as slaves to the Indians, and that messed everything up. So the Indians got fed up with these guys, and they were going to wipe them out.
Wow.
Now that you mentioned the
Indians, talk about the pilgrims and the Indians. Sometimes it's wrongfully said that the pilgrims stole from the Indians, that the pilgrims mistreated the Indians, that pilgrims killed the Indians. Tell us about that.
Okay, that is true. When people come to Plymouth, they do say to me, did the pilgrims steal the land from the Indians? I'm right on the town brook. That's where the plantation was built. And before the pilgrims came here, hunters would come from Europe, hunt and go back home. On occasion, they would invite Indians aboard their ships to trade with them, capture them as slaves, and take them back to Europe. One of those Indians' name was Squanto. Squanto was a Pawtuxet Indian. Pawtuxet means small river. They were named after the river. He was invited aboard a ship by a hunter by the name of Hunt. I know, hard to believe. Hunt takes him back to Europe. He escapes to a monastery, learns English. 6 months before the pilgrims come, he comes back in another ship to discover the Pawtuxet Indians wiped out by a plague. He went into mourning with Massasoit and the Wampanoag. 6 months later, the pilgrims arrived. He became the interpreter between the pilgrims and the Indians. That is the only way they could communicate. Governor William Bradford did refer to him as a special gift from God. But the reason I bring it up is, again, when people come here, they assume the pilgrims stole the land from the Indians. That is not true. The Indians did not want the land. They would not come back on it because of the plague. The pilgrims took land. Nobody wanted. Everything after that they paid for to the chief, Massasoit. Now, Jerry, this is very important. If we can't own property, we have absolutely no power. Whoever owns the property we do business on will be our master. We will be their slave. We have to have the ability to own property. And the number one property the pilgrims believed they owned and nobody had a right to touch was their conscience, what they believed. Mm. What you believe is your property. Nobody has a right to take it from you. And that's why the pilgrims came to Plymouth. There was that gentleman back in England trying to take the property of what they believed away from them. They would not allow it. They came here instead. And, of course, that gentleman's name is King James.
Mm. All right. And I understand that millions of Americans today are descendants from the Mayflower.
That is true. About 30 million. Yeah. See, when we came here, we had a communal existence. We were forced into that. The pilgrims knew it wouldn't work by the guy financing the trip. He wanted to be paid. So we had a communal existence for 3 years, and half the population died. And quite frankly, it wasn't looking good for anybody else. So Governor Bradford changed to land ownership. Now every family owned their own land, grew their own food, and fed themselves. Then they simply traded with each other what they had left over. We call that free trade. That worked. They never had a starving day after that. They tripled their production. But now here's the problem. How do you divide the land? The pilgrims divided their land equal to the amount of people in their family. More children, more land. I mean, after all, we only had 51 people. We had to get going. And it did work. Today, over 30 million people are descended from the Mayflower.
Wow. All right. We could talk with you all day, but we're out of time. Leo Martin, thejenney.org. Jenny is spelled J-E-N-N-E-Y, as in the Jenny Museum, Interpretive Center, Learning Center, etc. Thank you so much, Leo. All the best.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
Okay, you too. Thanks. Bye-bye.